Hello, humans. It's Vine Down time. You are here for the weekly Vine Down, the show where we talk candidly about all things enrollment and admissions and all the topics that are adjacent to that. If you don't know me, I am Emily. I've worked across probably 500 colleges on everything from CRM, student search, operations, and consulting. And if you don't know College Vine, we are like LinkedIn for high school students in that we are a professional network where students are publishing profiles in order to get recruited by colleges. Colleges can send connection requests. Students can say yes or no to them. And when a student says yes, a connection is formed and it's a super high signal inquiry for you, the college. We have over 2 million students on our network, hundreds of colleges recruiting here. And we think a lot about student behavior and our own staff comportment in our jobs and admissions. And today on the show, I'm joined by Erica Jackson, who is the Senior Director of Admissions at Wayne State University in Detroit. Erica, Cheetah Woman, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And today, Erica and I are going to chat about balance amidst chaos in that, like, it's crazy times. It's been crazy times for a while. We've had a tiny sliver of good news this week as colleges began to receive ICERs, but we're still woefully behind on financial aid and packaging and all the catch-up that needs to happen. And that chaos extends across a bunch of different topics. And we know now that this sort of chaos in our work lives is really the rule instead of the exception anymore, or at least I'm willing to call it at that at this point. And so Erica and I, as two wise old ladies, will be chatting about how to conduct yourself accordingly, given like this constant state of chaos. And my hope is that you'll leave the show today with some validation for not only like the bigness of the feelings that you might be feeling in your work, but also some really tactical ideas about exactly how to move through at potentially a little less cost to yourself. So Erica, as we start, this is how we always start. Please share with us three key lessons that you have learned in your career.
Thanks, Emily. At first, I thought I was going to struggle with this question, and then three things just clearly popped into my head. And so first of all, this is like my third career. So I started out as a litigator, and one of the partners that I worked with, he said, "You don't ask, you don't get." And what that taught me is that you need to ask for the things that you want. You need to be able to advocate for yourself and to be fearless in some extent, because sometimes we have to ask for difficult things. We have to advocate for things that we know might not be possible. But at the same time, if you don't ask for what you need, then you certainly won't get it. And if you ask, you have at least a 50% chance that you may be able to get what it is that you need. And so that was something that, you know, I think just in terms of my background and everything, I was hesitant to be like forward in that way. I thought it was very forward to just ask for what you need.
Oh, like rude? Like this, I'm like taking up too much space. Like this surely is too, I'm being
right.
Too much.
Or just, like being too forward. You know, I thought that that was like something that maybe would be frowned upon. But I have learned that it is important to ask for what it is that you need and to advocate for yourself and for others. So that is something that is something that I've brought with me through every job that I've had, every position that I've had. And something that I tell people who are on my team, or I tell my kids, because I want them to ask for what they need as well, because otherwise you're definitely not going to get that. And then one of the valuable lessons that I learned early on in my career was never stop networking, like don't stop networking. I had gotten to a point where I thought, you know, I was going to be practicing law for the rest of my life. And after like 7 years and three children later, I realized that I wanted more work-life balance. And I had transitioned into development work. And I thought that, oh, okay, I found my new place and this is what I'm going to do. And unfortunately, due to some leadership changes, it wasn't the right environment for me. It wasn't the right position for me, but I had stopped networking. I wasn't a lawyer anymore. So I wasn't going to like bar functions, bar association functions. I wasn't being part of organizations, either professional or community-based organizations that I was passionate about. And so I was in a new profession in a new field and really had disconnected from other professionals. And so then when it was time for me to make a change, or what I thought would be time for a change, I was really at a crossroads and I kind of didn't know where to begin. So I went back to the beginning because one of the books that I read when I was trying to get a job as an attorney is Guerrilla Tactics: Defining the Legal Job of Your Dreams. And I think it was like the 7 magic words of your cover letter is that, you know, like, for example, it'd be Emily Smith suggested that I contact you. And it reminded me of the importance of networking and expanding your net as broad and wide as possible, because it really can not only just help you with making connections, but you can find mentors. You can find folks who've lived experiences that you either haven't yet experienced, or, you know, just have connections with other people, and you never know where that next job or that connection can come from. And for me, even through 3 different industries, every job I have had is a direct result of some type of connection, whether it was an alumni connection with my, you know, alma maters, or people that I had worked with at different, you know, either higher ed institutions or other places. So don't stop networking. I think that's like hugely important. And then the last thing, which I definitely learned in this job, even though I should have learned it earlier in my career, is balance. So I started the job in undergraduate admissions on a leap year, February 29th, 2016. And I went from doing law school admissions to undergrad admissions, which are 2 totally different worlds. And so I was like drinking water out of a fire hose for, you know, quite a long time. And I wasn't drinking water. I wasn't taking lunch breaks. I was working long hours into the night. And I ended up with a kidney stone. And I will tell you, that is something that will stop you in your tracks.
Yes. And are you paying attention now?
Right. You missed all the other signs. Right. Let me just put you down. And right. So that's when I realized, like, okay, this is not working. This is not sustainable. And I was lucky enough to, by chance, meet someone who had left the corporate world and started doing wellness retreats for corporations and for their teams. And she invited me to one of her wellness retreats. And that is where I learned to meditate and where it helped me find balance. And as well as some, you know, other skills that I think everybody needs to manage life. So that was a very important lesson and something that now every day I try to focus on. So I wake up in the morning and I meditate and I do my deep breathing. I can tell when something is going to stress me out. So I'm like, okay, pause, take 3 deep breaths. And I can't tell you how helpful that is. Like, it seems like it's so simple, but it really does make a difference. And so, and then when you get those things in balance and then you balance your health and all the other things, then, you know, it just makes you a more productive and I think happier person.
Yeah. I think that wisdom comes with like having to learn some hard lessons and to like have to have like the firsthand experience. Like if I had said like, Erica, you're working too hard, you're going to give yourself a kidney stone, you'd be like, Emily, I got this. Like, hold my beer. I got this. Let me work this hard. Like you needed to get into, like you needed to have that experience of being like, nope, this is serious. This is for you. Here is your kidney stone in order to like have the motivation to go learn those lessons. I'm curious about your meditation practice. I do not have a meditation practice. I'm still like, I like wake up and like look at my phone with one eye, which I absolutely know my logical brain tells me that that messes with my brain waves, that messes with my circadian rhythms. And yet I do it every morning. Can you share with me a little bit about your meditation practice? Because to me, it feels like I don't have time for that. It's too big and scary. Like,
yeah. I am that person. I was such an impatient person before, and I actually learned how to do my own guided meditation. But then one of my colleagues at work, when I was talking to them about meditation, told me about the Calm app, and that is my go-to. The Calm app is super simple. You can do 10-minute meditations, 7-minute meditations, but I also use it to go to sleep at night. I listen to sleep stories. And it helps me sleep better. And then when I wake up in the morning, I think it's a great way to start the day. And then the bonus is now Jay Shetty, who is like a, you know, a former monk, he does the Daily Jay. And so he has these like, you know, 7-minute, like really intentional, like moments of reflection and things to focus on. And first of all, he has a beautiful voice and a calming voice. And so if I have extra time, I'll listen to the Daily Jay and I'll meditate. Otherwise, I at least meditate and try to start the day in that way.
I love that practice. I'm really excited to hear about it. I too have the Calm app. I need to be a better user of it, clearly. And I liked what you said about like, yeah, I know that if I can take 3 deep breaths, I can actually get some space for like space between me and the thing. And yeah. I think about this in our work a lot. In fact, you did a Vine down a couple months ago, just me talking about like the autonomic stress response and like the things that happen when we're in conflict with other colleagues. So if you haven't seen that, check it out.
Okay.
Because there's like a series of things that happen in our bodies when we feel stressed or threatened. And I think that's what you're saying. Like I can take these breaths to get some space for this. So this like third lesson on balance is actually a segue right into the topic that we're going to talk about, which is just around like how to be a good steward of yourself during the chaos of the last few cycles. Because again, like I wish I could say that this is exceptional. It will end. Like it won't. Staff morale probably won't. No, it won't. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about like the duck paddling. And this is sort of what we talked about a little bit in the pre-show where, you know, in your role, you are the constant like influx of new things, whether it's like new programs, new segments of students, new problems and challenges in the recruitment office. And you sort of have to like be this big absorbent sponge of all of the work and then get your team moving in a separate direction. How do you handle the like sort of late ads, late shakeups around the cycle, around your work and admissions? Like what is your mindset and mental models around all of the additive work and stress that's coming your way?
Yeah, that is a great question because I honestly feel like this is going into my 8th cycle. No admission cycle has been the same. And particularly the last 7 years, it's just been, like we said before, the wild, wild west. It's been, totally. You know, very unpredictable. And I think that it's funny because I do think that my prior life as a litigation attorney, where you just had to think quickly on your feet and you had to manage so many things at the same time, one of the things that it helped me do is like they say going to law school teaches you how to think like a lawyer. What it really does, it teaches you to take wide swaths of information and synthesize it down to find out what you need to focus on and how to solve problems, like what needs to be solved and how to solve problems. So that's typically how I try to like manage the things that are constantly coming at me, is that I try to quickly assess, okay, like there are all these things happening. What's the most important thing right now? And what's the most important thing to focus on? And then what do I need to do? And whose help do I need? Because I will also say that I was probably someone before who was less likely to delegate and felt like I needed to, you know, do everything. And I also had a problem with trying to do things perfectly. And we all know that good is the enemy of great, but perfect is the enemy of good. And so I just had to get to the point where, and really, I think the position itself lends itself to, you don't really have a lot of time to, you know, think through things and like just not make decisions. Like you have to make decisions and you have to, you know, figure out what's the best path forward based on the resources you have and based on, you know, leadership sometimes. And so that is something that has also been a challenge recently, is that even at my institution, we've had a lot of leadership change. Mm-hmm. So you might be going down the path of this particular person thinks that these things are important and this is what you need to focus on. And then they're no longer here and someone else new comes in. And so you have to adjust. And so I think the best things that I have learned to do is just quickly identify what needs to happen and what resources are needed. So that might mean collaboration with other colleagues on campus. Right now, we're collaborating a lot with financial aid because of everything that's happening with the FAFSA. And although, you know, financial aid, the Office of Financial Aid is going to be communicating to students and families about all of these delays, I think it's incumbent on me and the undergrad admissions office, because we have a robust communication plan for prospective students and admitted students, and then students who, you know, we're trying to yield right now. And so I'm trying to look for ways, like, how can we be helpful? What can we do? Because their success is our success. Like, if we can't package students and get them financial aid awards, then they can't make decisions about where they're going to be able to attend college. So, I don't know if I answered the question correctly, but I do think that that it really is a time when you know, when so many changes are happening and so there's so much uncertainty, to just lean into the things that are working well, and to try to find ways to communicate more with students and families, to find ways to collaborate with colleagues. And even in the state of Michigan, where I am, we have 15 public universities, but there we have an organization for all of the directors of admission at each institution. And we rely heavily on each other for advice, information sharing, because we really are all in this together. And at the end of the day, we really want more Michigan students and families to go to college and get a college education. And so that's really what the heart of this work is about. And that's what fuels me. That's why I feel like this is purpose-driven work, because I know that a college education changed my life and the trajectory of the life of my family. And so whatever we need to do to get more people and more students to that same endpoint is what matters most.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that like mission-drivenness is certainly something that like, that's why we're all here. Like, that's like the table stakes of why we're all in the jobs that we're in. Certainly something I think about a lot. I actually left higher education for 1 year to go work in telecom between companies. I felt like I needed to honor a non-compete. And I went and worked in this other industry where I found like people didn't give two rips about like the end user, the customer, like the end thing, because it was a cell phone technology company. And like everyone wanted to get their jobs done, but they wanted to get their jobs done, go home and leave. Like no one really cares on a human level if you dial a phone and it actually connects. And that's the work there. And the work here, as you're saying, is this like deeply human work that's deeply impactful to human life. And I think you're also saying that there's like this curiosity that you see that ladders up to that mission, which is like, I can very quickly look around me and see what resources I have available so that I can get into action quickly. And that's potentially your attorney training coming online. But like those of us without attorney training, that would feel hard. But you're like the first part of your answer, you're like the Jason Bourne of enrollment, because you're like, okay, I'm looking around, like I'm seeing the exits, I'm like seeing who I can leverage, like I'm, yeah. You know, and like implicit in that too, and this is sort of what I want to ask you, and this is going to be a tough question, implicit in that, with the overlay of like there will be leadership changes and there will be like a certain amount of like institutional political correctness, that's like a cover your ass component. And I'm curious, like, and that's maybe a rude read on that, like, or a crass phrase.
It's but
like
an honest read. Okay.
Yeah. Like, tell me a little bit about how you think about communicating for yourself and for your team in a way that feels both genuine and authentic to you and to the work, and also safe in that way.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think part of the way that I think about it is, no matter who's in a leadership position, if the things that I'm advocating for or need, I try to lead with, and the basis for what I'm asking for or information that I need to share, I try to find where the common thread is for everyone, which for me, I think should be what's in the best interest of the student, what's in the best interest of my team, and what's in the best interest of the institution. And if I can find the common ground to weave that messaging into whatever it is that whatever we're dealing with. And like, so when it comes to making a decision, if I have to ask for something that I know might be difficult, or give news, if I have to share news that I know nobody wants to hear, I think also that it's helpful that I'm in this stage of my career, that I have the confidence to be able to do that. Because I've been at this institution for 20 years. So I feel like I do have capital here, because people know that I'm going to be honest, and that I'm also going to make sure that, you know, that I've done my due diligence so that they can trust what I'm saying. And I think that that goes back to, you know, any institution, any role that you're in, your integrity matters a lot. And so for me, I'm okay delivering bad news, or, you know, when things weren't going well for my institution, when enrollment was declining, and we know all the issues with the demographic cliff that's coming and everything. I was just I'm always honest and upfront, whether it's a presentation to our board of governors or a presentation or a meeting with the president or the provost or whoever it is. I don't think that it makes any sense to not share the news. And even if it's not good news, but I also try to find an opportunity to say, okay, this is where things are, but here are some things that I think that we can do. And, you know, here's what we need to do and here's our path forward. But at the end of the day, I try not to worry about the decisions that I make if I know that I made a decision that was in the best interest of students, best interest of our team, and the best interest of the institution. Like, that's my guiding light.
Yeah, that like triangle of three things, like, does it work for students? Does it work for me and my staff? And does it work for the institution? Like, proves out then that like the decision is actually the best one.
Correct.
I totally
you can justify it. Yeah. Yep.
Well, and then you're not like working so hard or over indexing to overcomplicate the truth or the authentic thing. Like, you're just basically saying, like, if it checks out in these three corners, like, I'm good. And like, we can be confident about like giving the truth. And you're also sort of speaking to like your own personal brand as like a kind straight shooter with high integrity. And if you like, if that's how you've established yourself, then you get to like, you get to move with latitude in that way.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So we've talked about how you like would comport yourself in terms of like that sort of cover your ass aspect. I'm curious about like how candid you are with your team in and how you model candor across your team so that to create one of the things we talk about on the show all the time is sort of psychological safety within the admissions office. And I'm curious if you would talk a little bit about sort of like modeling candor for your team.
Yeah, that is a great question. And I absolutely try to lead with candor, but I also try to protect and not share information that I think is going to cause concern or harm. You know, like we're a public institution. So, you know, when it comes time for like budget cuts or things like that, I try to share information so that, you know, they're aware of what's happening, but that they're not deeply concerned. But I'm also very candid and I share with them, like, sometimes one of my phrases that they know is like, you all, I'm on the struggle bus, like, or I'll be very candid, like, you know what, I'm really concerned about, you know, this that we're dealing with right now. And I'm candid with them. You know, a couple of weeks ago we were on in our meeting and I was like, I have heart palpitations right now. Like, I'm just really stressed out right now. And I think that me, you know, showing up in that way, like, helps them to trust me because they know that I'm going to be authentic with them. And they can tell, you know, when things are good, that I'm their biggest cheerleader and advocate. And that I'm also going to be with them in that feeling when we're all feeling concerned, or we're worried, like, I'm going to acknowledge that because I don't want to pretend like everything's rosy when it's not rosy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we do have to, you know, deal with difficult things, but, I try to be as candid as possible. And I do know that they really appreciate that, but I also know that they care about me enough to say, when I say I'm having heart palpitations, they're like, don't do that. Like, you need to get some rest. Like, you know, don't stay up too late doing emails. Like, they'll, you know, they'll admonish
you. They like hand you your phone with the call map on. They're like, here, listen, Erica, lie down.
Or they'll remind me like, hey, you need to schedule some vacation time. You know, that kind of thing. And so I appreciate that as well.
I think that's awesome feedback and also awesome modeling. Okay, I want to switch to the tactical. Before we wrap up, I want to talk about some of the tactical things that you do with, like, you know, across these three careers and across time, you know, time spent in the working world. You have a good perspective on sort of some of the tactical things that you do when things get crazy. I know I myself go to a certain style of list making that we can maybe talk about, and you have a technique that you like deploy when things get crazy. Can you share that with our audience?
Yes, I'd be happy to. And I actually deploy it. I think I deploy it on a daily basis, which helps me when things get crazy because
it's not like a sometimes thing. Got it.
Yeah. So I learned about the Pomodoro technique, which it helps you focus. Like, technically the Pomodoro technique is like finding a specific task, a dedicated focus time for that. And usually you start out with like 25 minutes that you dedicate to this one task. And then it's also important to include breaks in that. And so, you know, there's a phrase, and I have to read it because I want to get it right. There is virtue in work and there is virtue in rest. Use both and overlook neither. So We can get so stressed out about something that we just think that we should just sit down and just focus on that for like an hour or 2 hours. And we reach the point of diminishing returns because we're not resting. We're not taking breaks. But the one thing I loved about love about the Pomodoro method is it's focus time. I close my door. I focus on one particular thing that I need to get done. And then in addition to that, I deploy the get it done method, which is I only put three things on my list to do every day. Like the most important things that I need to get done. And I know that I need to, you know, to complete. And it gives you momentum because I know there's more than three things I need to do a day. But if I put 10 things on my list of things that I need to do, and I only get one or two of them done, I don't feel like I've accomplished anything. I don't have any momentum to, you know, to keep doing, you know, like making progress. It just feels like I'm defeated. Like I didn't get anything done today.
Right.
I put three things on my list, and most days I get all three of them done. Some days I only get two because maybe I'm in meetings all day or I have interruptions. But if I get those three things done, I feel like I've accomplished something. And then for the next day, before I leave the office, I write down the three things that I need to get done the next day. And I cannot tell you how that has changed my productivity. But also just feeling like I'm making progress.
Moving forward.
I'm moving forward. And that's really, really helpful. And so I share that with like members of my team. I share that with colleagues and peers because it's the best method and technique that I've discovered. And it's so simple, but it makes so much sense. And even at home.
Yeah, those top three is big.
There's something I need to get done, like cleaning out the junk drawer or something like that. You feel like, oh, I don't have time to do that. I'll set a timer on the microwave, 15 minutes. It's amazing what you can get done in 15 minutes. Like, it's amazing. So,
Yeah, I use the Pomodoro technique too, not on the daily like you do. But for me, it's a way to quell, like I have lots of things running in my brain all the time. Like I'm a working parent. I always like, I'm sort of doing like, okay, like this kid needs this thing. This client needs this thing. Like, and it's all happening at once. And I sort of get like overwhelmed to say like, there are too many things. And I'm going to spend like 3 hours doing this list. And what ends up happening, like you say, you get frozen, you don't do anything. And the Pomodoro technique to me is a forcing function on like one thing. Actually, my timer is 20 minutes, 25. Okay. I can't handle 20 minutes for me, but like, it's a way for me to defer the other stuff in like mentally and emotionally defer the other stuff. Like, okay, I will think about the next thing in 18, 17, 16 minutes. Yes. And if you're thinking about a way to get the Pomodoro technique real, there's a great browser extension called the Tomato Timer. It's free. It goes on your Chrome. Oh, do you not know about this? This is how I do Pomodoro technique.
This. I did not know about this.
It's a thing in your browser. I think it's for Chrome, Safari, all the main browsers. And it's called Tomato Timer. You can customize your interval. You can say like, I want to do three 20 minute timers. And then I take a 10 minute break.
Smart. I love that.
Like, I did not know my browser.
I love that.
Like it's on my browser. It's like a clock that's running. And for me, it's that function of like, okay, I can think about the next thing when the timer is up. For now, I am here doing this. And that seems so simple, but that is the organizing I need when things get crazy.
And that takes me all the way back to the balance and the meditation. Like one of the things that meditation has taught me is how to be in the moment and how to just focus on the present because it's so easy. Like you said, there's so much going on that, and so much white noise in our heads. Like you're like you said, you're thinking about what you have to do for your kids. You're thinking about all the things that you have to follow up on at work. But I find that, you know, with the meditation and the focus on the now, along with that technique of just focusing on, you know, and breaking down larger tasks into smaller pieces so that you can get it done, is what has helped me, you know, be productive and stay productive.
Yeah. You're clearly like a person with really strong execution. That's not a natural skill of mine. So I admire it in you. And yeah, folks out there on the audience, check out Tomato Timer. Tell us how you like it. I'd be curious
to
hear.
Genius.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Let me know how you like the browser countdown. It's strict when you're watching that time countdown. You're like, fine, I'm doing the thing. Like, damn it, Tomato Timer. I see you. Erica, thank you very much. I want to close as we always do to hear in the midst of all this chaos and all this, I mean, good Lord, bad news on earth and complicated things. Curious to hear what you are excited about in the next 6 months, if you would share that with us as we close.
I'm excited about being able to get FAFSA awards out.
Oh, aren't we all?
I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about
your answer.
I'm excited about warmer weather coming. Mm-hmm. I'm in Michigan. Somebody please tell Michigan that it's springtime. We're supposed to get snow tomorrow. So
I mean, the mountains of Colorado can't tell Michigan that. So you're on your own.
And I'm excited about rest and rejuvenation. So like, you know, in the summer months, that's when I try to take time away, spend with my family. We have family reunions coming up this summer, some of which were postponed, you know, years and years because of the pandemic. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to spending time with friends and family.
Great answers. Everybody out there on spring break or receiving ICERS and getting aid packaged, good luck. Godspeed. We are talking about how to get more of our College Vine audience and students to fill out FAFSAs, because I know we are still woefully behind on the student side and we are woefully behind on the college side. So everyone, good luck and take care of yourselves while you are fighting those fights on the institutional side. Folks, next week on the Vine Down, we have Jeff Baird from Enroll ML. Pretty excited to have Jeff. We're going to be talking about machine learning and the future of AI, as well as some really keen perspective on business process in the admissions office. So it will be like the anti-emotional topic of business process and trying to get clean business processes in admissions. So we'll see you next Thursday. Erica, thank you so much for being here, being candid.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks very much. Vine Down audience, we'll see you soon. Be well.